We are continuing our study in the book of Romans. We're still in the first chapter of Romans, and last time we got down to the midst of the 30th verse. In this portion of the letter to Romans, the Apostle Paul is showing the need that the Gentiles have for the gospel. He's made the statement earlier that I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. And so here he's showing the need that the Gentiles, the need that the Greek, so to speak, has for this gospel. And in the course of showing this need, he comes down to this 29th and 30th and 31st verses, and he is naming things that are known sins that the Gentiles are guilty of. Now, it's really a shame in many ways to have to even talk about these things. These are terrible sins. But the Bible names them, the Bible defines them as being things that are sin, things that keep people away from God, separate people from God. And so we're talking about these individually. And we've gotten through about 14 of these sins in our last lesson. And we're going to then pick up there and go on through the remainder of these things, these names here. But so I'd like to begin reading with the 29th verse. Here he's talking about the need that the Gentiles have for the gospel, and he's showing the problems that they have among themselves as sinners. He says, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, verse 30, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, verse 31, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful. And so in the course of naming these, and in our study of these, we've gotten through the one that's described here as despiteful last time. Despiteful is being insolent, rude, and disrespectful of authority, and these are actions done to persons in their own presence. And then the next one he names is proud. The sin of pride is actually a condition in which one is haughty or arrogant, thinking more highly of oneself than one ought to think. That's pride. It's lifting ourselves up when we should not be lifted up. Lifting ourselves up whenever we really should be more like humbling ourselves. And this problem of having pride is just the opposite of the quality of humility. Here's a person who's not able to see that he's a sinner. Here's a person who will not admit that he has a need for the gospel. Here's a person who will not admit that he really is in need of begging God for forgiveness and making a change in the life. This is what pride does to us. The next one he names is boasters. This condition of being a boaster is really one of self-assuming, one of lifting oneself up by continually telling how good, how better, how superior the person is. Those who take more credit than they should fall in this category of boasters. Here again, it's very difficult for them to admit that they're wrong, that they are sinners, that they do have a need for the gospel. The next thing he names here is inventors of evil things. Inventors of evil things. Injurious things. Minds seeking to find ways of doing evil. And as ingenious as man is, as smart and brilliant as man is, some of us even being in the classification of geniuses, it's very much to our discredit that we take this ability and turn it into being inventors of evil things, trying to find more ways, new ways to do evil. And that's what those who are separated from God, that's what those who have been given up to their own lusts, find themselves doing. And some of these evil things are hideous things. They're things that very definitely show the degradation of the human race, the degradation of the bodies of these persons by employing these evil things that they're continually inventing. And so we see that our position then is to recognize these things for what they are, just because they're new or seem to be new to us, does not make them good, doesn't make them something that we want to participate in or be a part of. Because when you really look at these things, somewhere down the line, somebody in the past has already done this. Really, it's not new, but it's new maybe to this generation. And so just because it's novel, just because it's new, doesn't make it good. It can still be an evil thing. The next thing he names here is disobedient to parents. This is a quality found among those Gentiles who had been given over by God to their own evil ways, those who had been given up to the reprobate or the depraved mind, disobedient to parents. This is an offense considered to be so serious among the Jewish people that the Jewish law punished this by death. A person could be stoned to death for being disobedient to parents. And certainly this is the first step toward a lawless and godless society. When we lose disrespect for our parents, who are the very first authority that we know, when we lose respect for them, then the next step is to lose respect for the laws of the land, and the next step is to lose respect for God himself. And so this is a very serious condition to be in, and we see it around us daily. There's a tendency among children to see how far they can go, how far they can rebel against parents, but we need to be very strict in showing loyalty to our parents. It's a sin. It's a named and known sin described here in the Bible. Then verse 31, the first thing he names there is without understanding. Now this is someone who is actually senseless or ignorant, foolish, inconsiderate. And so these people that seem to be so wise on the surface, they really, when you get down to their knowledge about God and the things of God and what they're doing with their lives, they really are very ignorant. They're without understanding. And you take this quality of being without understanding and put it together with that quality of being inventors of evil things, and you can see how then they invent these things that are so novel and unique that are evil things, and not having any understanding then about how to use them, about how to apply them, about how to really interpret them, makes for a deadly combination. And it's very easy for younger folk to fall into this trap of being led by something that's new and novel, which is really an evil thing, and being led because they don't have any understanding about what it's leading them into, about what the end result's going to be, about how God really feels about it. This can be true of anything from the use of drugs to the use of sex in an illegal manner to the way that language is used, the kind of words that are used, the taking of God's name in vain, to the thoughts that one would be led by that are lascivious thoughts. So, without understanding. The next one he named is covenant breakers. A covenant breaker is one who is faithless, one who is false to the contracts that they would make. And we see this in business. We see this in just common agreements that a person would have among themselves, where they can't be trusted. Their word is not really worth anything. And we really see this in a very prominent area of marriage and divorce. These contracts are made in the marriage, the pledges are made, and yet one or more of the parties may decide they don't want to live up to this. They may decide that they want to break this covenant they've made, want to be false to their contract, and it leads to a very devastating thing, not only in the family and the personal lives of these people, but also in our society. Our society has been devastated because of the lack of harmony in the home, because of the breakdown of the home, because the children are being raised without proper parentage. Husbands and wives aren't living together and being husbands and wives. They are living a life like animals live, and it has its foundation in the fact that they are really covenant breakers. They're not keeping this contract they made to love, honor, and obey, and to be the loving spouse that they should be. Also, a covenant breaker would be one who wouldn't feel very loyal to the law of God either. Be willing to break the laws of God because it feels no responsibility, no compelling feeling of living up to what he's promised to do. The next thing he names here is without natural affection. Without natural affection. This is the lack of affectionate regard toward their children. These persons, not only do they have children that don't love them, children do not respect them, but they don't have respect for their children. So you have a double edged sword here towards destruction of the society. And these persons don't have any feeling for their children. Now we should start having feeling for our children even before we have any children. When we're just contemplating having a family, when we're in the position of having a family, we should start having a feeling for how we want to raise and develop and be toward our children. And certainly, when a lady becomes pregnant, she should have a strong feeling toward her child. She should feel that this child is going to be my child. I'm already one that needs to be responsible for this, and so should the father. There's a responsibility there as soon as pregnancy occurs, and this child has a right to have the very best things in life, has a right to have good prenatal care, but free of drugs, free of the abuse of the body that may interfere with the development of the child while it's in the uterus. The parents should have that responsibility and that feeling for the child. And certainly this would rule out the feeling that one would have to get an abortion, to destroy this child. That's without natural affection. This natural affection is one that in which a parent wants to nurture and love and take care of and raise this child as it should be raised. But when one is separated from God, when one does not have the feeling that God wants one to have, then one of the consequences is without natural affection. The next thing he names here is implacable. Implacable is a meaning that really means to not be willing or able to forgive somebody. It's described as being heartless. One who will not be reconciled where there has been a quarrel. And, of course, in some societies, this is taken to an utter extreme where one person is known to pursue another who's offended them with unyielding revenge until finally they're able to bury the hatchet in their skull. They may pursue them for years. They may lay in wait for them for years, but they never get over this feeling of wanting to get even. And so we need to be able to forgive. We cannot be forgiven if we're not able to forgive ourselves. And so there has to be a way in which we can become reconciled with those that we have differences with, in which we can work out a dispute, a disagreement, in an orderly manner. But these persons are implacable. They have lost this ability to do this, and as the description here is, they are actually heartless. Then the last sin that he names is that of being unmerciful. Unmerciful. Now here again, unmerciful has with it the idea of being able to forgive, but it's also described as being ruthless. That is, no feeling of compassion. Not able to sympathize with another in their time of distress. Not able to feel the hurt and the pain that another person is able to feel. Not able to be in their shoes, so to speak, so that you can really know how they are feeling. But this person has no sympathy. This person has no feeling of compassion. This would be one who would be able to pull the trigger on another, so to speak, without having any feeling for it. This is one who have no feeling for the devastation caused by such things as divorce, such things as walking out on the family, such things as neglecting the children or neglecting the spouse, such things as not being able to show compassion on another who's in a time of distress, one who's in pain, or one who is hungry, or one who is in some kind of mental distress. These persons are not able to feel for fellow human beings. And here again is the result of one being left to the devices of their own mind, one who's been separated from God, and has lost this godly quality of caring for fellow humans. Now let me say again that this list of sins is given here primarily to show the need that the Gentile nations have for the gospel. The gospel has the answer to man's problems. The gospel can answer man's need for forgiveness of his sins. It is the power of God unto salvation. And for one to say that he has no need for the gospel, all he has to do is to go through this category of sins and see the things that he may be guilty of, see the things that he or she actually has that are going to be counted against him on the judgment day, and they can readily see the need for the gospel. It serves another purpose here in that it gives us a category of things that we can refer to that are hard and fast things that are named. And so if someone says, well, I'm not sure this is a sin, I'm not sure that's a sin, we can see where it's named here. We can see where it's described. It has a definition, and we can come to it and put our finger on it and read, yes, this is something that's wrong. This is something that the Bible does condemn, and I want to be sure that my life is free from these ungodly characteristics. We don't have to hum-haw and guess about what sin is. So far as these things that are named here are concerned, we have 23 things that are named that are definite sins that are condemned by the Bible. And so it's amazing how ignorant many people are of things that are known sins. They're doing things and they have no concept of the fact that what they're doing is really a sin. But the Bible names them here, and it's for our convenience, for our benefit, to come and be able to read them and to know really what sin is so far as these things are concerned. This doesn't mean that these are all the sins, but so far as this category is concerned, these things are sins and we need to know about them so we can apply these definitions to our lives. Verse 31 ends with a semicolon. And so verse 32 says, after naming all these sins, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. Now the persons that he's naming here, many of them know the judgment of God. They know that when they disobey God, that God is going to punish them for this. And they also know that they which commit such things are worthy of death. These actions that he names here, these sins that he's named, make one worthy of death. And we're talking about spiritual death. We're talking about separation from God. We're talking about the death that's going to come on the judgment day. The death is going to be the separation from God eternally. And so even though they know that God will judge these things, they know that it's going to make them worthy of death, they not only do the same, but they have pleasure in them that do them. There are some people that do these things knowing the consequences of them. And not only do they do these things, but they have pleasure in those that do them. They like to encourage these actions. They like to pay, so to speak, for someone to do these very things so they can be entertained by them, so they can enjoy just seeing someone else do them and know others are doing them. And so he definitely gives a stinging rebuke and condemnation here to those that would be guilty of these things. So not only should we not do these, but we should have a feeling of aversion for these actions that is so strong that we have no pleasure in someone else who would do these things. Now this would include the media and the entertainments that we have through books and magazines and so forth, in which we enjoy reading about other people who are guilty of these sins. We enjoy reading about a description of them committing these sins, and so we have pleasure in them that do them. So this would condemn not only the ones who commit these sins, but would also equally condemn those who have pleasure in others who commit these sins. And so we need to guard ourselves against enjoying the actions of others because they are doing things here that this Bible describes as a sin. So sin is truly bad in every respect. It's bad for us if we do it. It's bad for others if they do it. And it's bad for us if we enjoy seeing others do it. That's what he condemns here. It's an all-sweeping condemnation of these sins. So let me make an appeal to you at this time, dear friend, to look into your life and to see if you have things there that fall in the categories of these sins. And, of course, we all are guilty of some of these sins. You don't have to be guilty of all of them, but you can be guilty of some of them. Just be guilty of just one of them. And it then puts you in that category of persons who have a need for the gospel. We all have a need for the gospel. We all have a need for the forgiving power of God. First of all, we have to realize that we have this need. we have to realize that we are far short of the mark of the high calling. We have to realize that we are someone who is guilty. And then when we make that realization, then we begin to make changes in our lives. We begin to repent of these sins, turn from these sins, and get the forgiveness of God. So it's to our benefit to know about these sins. It's to our benefit to be knowledgeable, to have some kind of education, to not be without understanding, to not be in a state of ignorance, to not be without feeling, to not be proud and boasters, so that we can have that true state of humility, that true state of contriteness, that true state of being crushed at the very thought of our sin and our crime against God. And then we can approach God in that true humble state. We then can go through the elements of the gospel, the belief of the gospel, and the obedience to the faith. We can then do those things that are prescribed for us to do to remedy us from this tragic state that mankind is in, and we can be acceptable to God. We can then be persons who are acceptable to God. We can then be persons who have the feeling of having been forgiven, the feeling of confidence and assurance, the feeling of joy and victory, the feeling that we are going to be okay, we're going to be acceptable on that great judgment day, we're going to live forever with God and Christ in the heavenly state. That's what we want to be. That's what we want to have. We can turn this tragic chaos here that man's lives are in, we can turn that into a state of victory, of supremacy, and being acceptable to our God. So we close our lesson at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.